All right, welcome back. Episode 25 of the Reporter's Corner, Summer Edition, Part 2. I'm your one half of your co-host, Jared Rubato with the Bemidji Pioneer. With me is the other half of the co-host, Trent Singer from Sioux Falls Live. Trent, how are we doing today?
Doing good, man. Just another summer episode we got going on here. Another few and far between, but we've got some, a couple coaching changes that have happened here in the CCHA, and no better time now than to catch up with one of them.
Yeah, and we'll, I mean, hopefully we don't have to, but if there's a new coaching change every week, guess what? This podcast becomes weekly again. So,
yeah, right. Let's hope not. Jeez.
No, fingers crossed, right? No, but we got some, we have some summer plans with the Reporter's Corner. I think that it'll be a lot of fun. But in the meantime, we have a special guest today. It's the newest CCHA coach, Michigan Tech's Bill Muckholt. Bill came on the show today for about, 50 minutes, Trent? We had him on?
Well, about a 50-minute chat, yeah.
And I don't know how we jammed his entire hockey career into one 50-minute chat, but he is a well-traveled and very, very experienced man in this game, whether it's a player or a coach. And Trent, what did we talk to Bill about?
Well, obviously, 3 weeks, he was named the new head coach at Michigan Tech. He replaces Joe Shawn. Comes back to a program where he was an assistant coach for a little while during his time in the coaching ranks. But he's a guy who's from British Columbia area, played in the BCJHL with the Merritt Centennials in junior hockey, and then Kelowna Spartans, and then eventually made his way to the University of Michigan, where he was a 4-year player for the University of Michigan, won 2 national championships during that time. And then eventually went on to have about a 6-7 year career as a pro in the NHL, bounced around from the Canucks to the Islanders, Senators, Wild. So we talked a little bit about his playing career and what all that entailed. And then sort of what I thought was really interesting, and you'll hear it in the episode, a serendipitous venture into the world of coaching. Started off in the ACHA at Eastern Michigan before eventually kind of going to the junior route, Valencia, in the Western States Hockey League, and then New Mexico a year in the NAHL. Then he makes his way to Tech, coached under Mel Pearson for 4 years at Michigan Tech, and then went back to the junior route, 2 years in Tri-City, one of which he won a Clark Cup as a rookie coach in 2016, then returned to Michigan for 6 seasons as an assistant coach, 3 of which Michigan went to the Final Four. So he has been well-traveled in terms of getting to the big dance in college hockey. And then obviously last year, he's his first as a head coach in college hockey at Lindenwood, an independent program down in Missouri. And then now he is back at Michigan Tech. So we talked a little bit about all that. We talked all through the coaching ranks, and of course we closed it out with some one-timers, some fun ones too. I think you'll really enjoy it. He's coached so many guys, Jared. I mean, whether he's at Michigan, whether he was at Michigan Tech, he's definitely seen his hand of some really, really talented players. And I think he has some really cool perspective on it just kind of throughout this whole episode. He's full of stories too. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode. Michigan Tech's got a great new coach, and I know there's some excitement there in Houghton. So if you guys are listening, I hope you enjoy this one.
Yeah. So let's kick it over to our interview with Bill Muckholt. All right. We are here with the newest head coach in the CCHA, Bill Muckholt. Bill, thank you for joining us today. I think a good place to start is by congratulating you on the hiring at Michigan Tech. Obviously, you were an assistant for a few years at Tech, but we'll get into a little bit more of that later. But just talk about what it's been like coming back to campus, the whirlwind that's been the last 3 weeks, I'd imagine, and just kind of the response.
Yeah, thanks, Jared and Trent, for having me on. Obviously, super excited to get back to Michigan Tech and get started with that. So, yeah, it's been pretty hectic, obviously, trying to sell a home, buy a home, get moved, and survive some hail and tornado damage here in St. Louis.
Holy cow.
It has been pretty bad down there, I've noticed, right?
It was. We got 2 vehicles damaged and the house got hit. So, but we're fortunate. Those things can all be fixed.
That's glad to, yeah, glad to hear you're all right. I actually used to work down in Southeast Missouri in Cape Girardeau. So I spent a lot of time in that area, know the Lindenwood campus well, and we'll get into Lindenwood a little bit down the line, but we want to go into your career a little bit. I mean, what kind of got you to this spot? You're a Surrey, British Columbia native. You played three seasons in the BCHL for the Merritt Centennials and the Kelowna Spartans. I mean, I'm just curious to know, how did those years sort of help prepare you to make the jump into college hockey?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I was probably a little bit of a late developer, and, you know, I probably didn't grow early on. And so I played tier two in Merritt, and was really lucky to be able to play there and develop and learn under a guy named Brian Barrett, who was a huge mentor and helped me grow and learn as a player. And, you know, by the time I was 18 years old, I think that's when I started to get some serious Western Hockey League attention. And the Kamloops Blazers had a couple guys on the right wing, Jerome McGinley and Shane Doan. And I was trying to figure out where I was going to play, and didn't think I'd be ready to play in the National Hockey League or was even close to it at that point in time, and just decided on the path to go to college, and kind of chose the University of Michigan, came back as a 19-year-old year and had a monster year in that league. And you know, I think that was kind of that, you know, part of what helped put me on the map.
Yeah. You kind of led right into the next question. You have 14 goals, 11 points in your first season. And then you had 58 goals, 51 points in 48 games with Merritt your third season. I think that's supposed to be assists, Jared.
Yeah, sorry.
So what, I'm curious, you mentioned being a late bloomer. What do you feel like sort of clicked for you kind of in that jump?
Yeah, I mean, I always put up a lot of points in minor hockey. You know, I think the biggest thing is just transitioning as a 16-year-old, you know, to playing with guys that are 16 to 20 years old and a lot stronger, a lot bigger. You know, I think that first year was, you know, just hard to physically compete when you're giving up 35 to 50 pounds on the guy beside you. But I think it actually was as an incredible benefit, because when I did, you know, fill out and get to the National Hockey League and play at 205 pounds, I really felt like even if I was giving up 5 or 10 pounds on a guy, it felt like a win.
Yeah. You talk about that. You went to Michigan, and oh, those were four really, really good years for Michigan. Obviously, titles in 96 and 98, Frozen Four in all four of those years. Just talk about how that stretch of run with Michigan helped prepare you for the next level, and also helped prepare you to coach college hockey.
Yeah, I'm a huge believer just in the practices, the strength and conditioning. Obviously, you know, playing under a guy like Red Berenson, who has had such a tremendous impact on my life and as a player, as a person, as a coach, you know, Mel Pearson, Billy Powers, and a lot of great teammates that were driven, the leadership that was on those teams and the expectations and the standard that we had, the bar was set extremely high, and we held each other accountable, and, you know, a lot of special memories and a lot of great friendships and lifelong relationships.
And two, I mean, obviously Michigan had an incredible run in that stretch, but to make the Frozen Four all four of those years is wildly impressive. So what was so special about the guys in the room, the players on that team, that helped kind of establish that kind of run while you were in college?
Yeah, and I think the teams before us were close and were just starting to scratch at the surface, and really it became about winning the last game of the year. We lost in triple overtime to Maine and Providence, Rhode Island. For me, it was the second time in 2 years we lost in you know, the Centennial Cup, the Royal Bank Cup, in overtime the year before in junior. So those painful defeats, I think, are the things that kind of put you over the top, and I know just the disappointment that we felt after that triple overtime loss freshman year, the next step was, you know, finding a way to win that last game of the year. And that became the expectation and the bar. And you know, we were, that was what the whole year was about. And collectively as a group, from the coaching staff down through our players, that was the goal.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, you know, you were drafted, I think, out of, before college you were drafted and by the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah.
So pick 212, is that right? Is it, did I nail that?
221.
221.
Yeah.
Thought I saw that a little earlier.
They didn't like the 89 goals I scored that year, I guess. I don't know.
What is this? You played
caught a cold the week before the draft.
You played your first game for Vancouver in October after your last season in Michigan. And I always love asking this. I mean, you make your NHL debut. What do you remember about it? I mean, especially with it kind of being so close to where you grew up.
Yeah, a couple things. We played LA. We won the game 3-2. So Ray Ferraro, who's obviously done extremely well with broadcasting, but he taught me hockey school when I was about 12 years old. Oh, cool. And there was a picture in the local paper, and I remember going up to him and I go, "Hey Ray, how are you?" He goes, "Oh man, I feel like I'm 81 years old." I said, "You look like it too." And had a pretty good laugh, and that was a special moment for me, obviously, because he was such a tremendous player and a guy that I looked up to and had a lot of respect for. And then we won the game 3-2. I set up the game winning goal in overtime, or not in overtime, in the third period rather. And I think it was the second star of the game. I don't think it was the first star. If I was, it was only because of my first NHL game.
But yeah, they usually give you that bump.
Yeah, I got a little bump, but definitely being a star like that and having all my family and friends and the team winning the game and first game, it probably couldn't have wrote a better script.
Absolutely. And I mean, you got to play in over 250 NHL games, and you played with the Senators, obviously the Canucks, the Islanders. You had a little short stint with the Wild. Just talk about what life in the NHL is like as kind of a journeyman looking for a place to try and stick and break through.
Yeah, no question. I mean, for me, you know, I really don't like, you know, I had 13 shoulder surgeries, a neck fusion, and two knee surgeries. And that had a big, you know, obviously it altered my path as a player from breaking into the league and, you know, winning a couple of the rookie of the months at the National Hockey League level, being in consideration for rookie of the year. You know, I think third on our team in points as a rookie with guys like Alexander McGillney, Mark Messier, Marcus Naslin, that type, to basically starting to deal with some injuries and different things to fight through. And, you know, that's why I'm such a big believer in that there'll be life after hockey and getting your degree and the path to the NCAA, you know. And, you know, my philosophy too is that, you know, hockey's the avenue we're on, but we're growing men, we're building men. They're going to go out and be pillars in the community, be fathers, be husbands, hopefully want to get back and stay involved. Obviously, we want to make them the best version of themselves, the best players they can be, and take advantage of the academics. I've seen it for my teammates, different people in my life, players I've coached. It's a wonderful thing, and it really changes people's I love people that work hard. I grew up working hard, but if you can work smart and better your life, I'm a big believer in post-secondary education.
No doubt. Yeah, you got your first ACHA collegiate coaching job at Eastern Michigan, 2006, and then became the head coach the next season. You know, what led you to club hockey after your playing career, and how did you use that experience to start climbing the ladder?
Yeah, we played in a charity game against the under 18 team, and you know, it was a star-studded affair with likes of, you know, Yzerman, Fedorov, Chelios, bunch of players. And we played, I was going through a bunch of injuries and different things, and Dennis Hextall was there, and Dennis grabbed me and said, "Hey, why don't you come down to the the Red Wing alumni and skate with us on, it was Tuesday or Wednesday night. And I said, yeah, okay, whatever. And at 5 o'clock, I get a phone call and it's Dennis. And he said, he's not only calling me, he's like, I'm in your driveway. Let's go. And so he's like, where are you? So he took me down there, and it was so awesome, because I realized that, you know, it was a bunch of guys that had gone through what I was going through. Like, very few guys retire out of the NHL on their terms or, you know, what have you. And it was just great to spend time. And I met, Lee Norwood, and Lee goes, will you help me out at Eastern Michigan with the club team? And I said, yeah, sure, I will. He goes, well, it's at 6 o'clock. I said, okay, that's great. And after he told me, he goes, well, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, not at night. Only time they could get the ice discounted. So I showed up the first day, quickly realized that these young men had a joy for the game of hockey and a passion for it. Maybe not quite the same talent level as the National Hockey League, but every other aspect that I really, truly admired and respected. So that was kind of the start of it for me. I showed up the second day and Lee goes, you're here. He was kind of surprised. I said, well, you asked me to help out. Like, I can't just help out once. So I kind of fell in love with those kids, and they have a special place, obviously, in my heart. And that's how the coaching journey started.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah. And, club hockey has a spot in the hockey world, and especially in the college hockey world, especially like, you know, the UNLV in Denver game last year, and club teams play Division I teams all the time in exhibitions. But I think there's kind of a misunderstanding of what club hockey is and just how serious of a hockey league it is for all of those players and coaches and families involved. So as someone who was on the inside of it, albeit, you know, a couple of decades ago, what is that spot for club hockey in the hockey world, and just how important is it for those people?
Yeah, it's a great question. You really start to see the passion that these kids have, the determination, the drive, and still a really good level of hockey. there's no question about that. I was fortunate to see the Lindenwood team with Gary Gardner here. They won the national championship this year with club hockey, and was really impressed with, how he led that program and his detail and his organization, and also the kids' commitment to each other. And, I got to watch all their games. And so that was really rewarding. The quality of hockey is at a high level. Obviously, we scheduled UNLV last year to two games, and they played us extremely tough. And, they're playing like it's game 7 in the Stanley Cup, and you're trying to get your guys to match that intensity. And it's a fine line between winning and losing. And you see the parity, I should say, in college hockey at the Division I level. Anybody can beat anybody at any given night.
Yeah, absolutely. And then before you went and did your first stint at Michigan Tech, you did two seasons with the Valencia Flyers in the Western States Hockey League, and then 1 year with the New Mexico Mustangs and the Null as an expansion team. And talk to me about those experiences and how that kind of gave you maybe that jumping off point to get into the college ranks.
Yeah, I went for 1 year out to Valencia. I was only there 1 year coaching, but really enjoyed my time out there, learned a lot, was also kind of working bunch of camps at the rink and power skating and kind of overseeing some of the men's tournaments, different things like that. So really got an education into the recreational business side of hockey at the minor hockey youth level and hockey camp and men's league, what have you. So that kind of opened my eyes. Had a gentleman by the name of Ken Dennis, who was a Hollywood producer, and He had a love for hockey and approached me about if I was interested in coaching in Albuquerque at the North American Hockey League level. And I think 5 days before the draft in a tender-based league, we signed up, and that was an education for me.
No doubt. I guess that sort of brings us to the place where it's kind of fateful for you. I mean, your first stint at Michigan Tech and under Mel Pearson, and you know, 2014-15 season, Michigan Tech went 29-10-2, tied for the most wins in college hockey. It was the first 20-win season for Michigan Tech in over 30 years. Michigan Tech had a number one ranking for the first time in 38 years. You coach players like Tanner Caro, Blake Pietola, Phoenix Copley. I mean, what can you tell us about that team and what they had to go on to kind of put together that kind of run?
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. So, like, I went up there, and I remember the first time driving up, and you know, he called in, checking in with me. He's still coming up here. I'm like, yeah, just passed Minneapolis. Called. Hey, I'm in Duluth. I go, am I getting close? He goes, you're getting there. And so got about halfway, and he goes, called, and he goes, where are you? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not there yet. Not there yet, coach. It was a great trip up there. You know, Mel Pearson brought me up there and got up there. You know, program was in a little bit of a down cycle. We were fortunate enough to inherit some good pieces on the roster that Pat Mikish and Jamie Russell had already secured. And I think Mel added some pieces to that in our first year. But it was basically changing the culture and the accountability and the acceptance to get better. I remember Mel said to the team, just come back in the best shape you can. There's a ski hill up there called Ripley Mountain, believe it or not. And literally the night before, you know, Mel tells me, like, you're going to run with the team tomorrow up the thing on this timed event. I'm like, coach, I've been at the golf course, you know, doing arm curls all summer. Like, I'm not playing. He goes, you'll be fine. And, you know, I beat a lot of the guys up that hill, and I certainly couldn't do it today, but I'm a competitive person, and I'm like, coach, we're in trouble. Like, we got to get in better shape, myself included. But it was a really special time, for really rewarding, a lot of good memories. You know, we knocked off and had some big wins and signature wins, and the kids just started to believe, started to grow, and they got that confidence and that swagger that they could beat anybody. And that's the one thing that I know about sports, and you got to go out and earn it, and you can't buy it. That's why you play the game. And really, a lot of great players. You know, Phoenix Copley, Matty Roy, Jujar Kara, Tanner Caro, Blake Pietola. I mean, there's Alex Patan, Brett Olson, yeah. A lot of really, really good hockey players. Mitch Reinke, Shane Hanna, I'm forgetting a bunch. Jamie Phillips was a really good goalie. He followed in Phoenix's thing. And I'm forgetting some others, but some really, really quality human beings, and really kind of elevated the program.
And I would imagine, too, a season like that, you really get to see the passion kind of come out of the town of Houghton and that school and the people involved. I mean, how much did you kind of feel the support from the community in a year like that?
So I remember going to a Rotary. Mel sent me, like, I think he went to the Kiwanis one, and he probably had all these things. He goes, you go to the Rotary one, and got up and introduced myself, and just, you know, this lady goes in the back, puts her hand. I'm like, yes, can I help you? Well, what if you guys aren't going to win? I'm like, yeah, I appreciate that. You know, we're going to get better. All of a sudden, I go on, I'm carrying, puts her hand up in the game. And she goes, like, Bill, like, what if you can't win? I'm like, try to reassure, like, we've won championships. Mel's been used to the tournament, and we're going to do things. And like, 2 minutes later, hand goes up and says, can I help you? Same thing. She goes, like, what if you're just like the Detroit Lions? And at the time, you know, the Lions were bad. Oh, yeah. Obviously, you know, they've done a tremendous job with Dan Campbell and completely revamped that program. But at the time, it was pretty, pretty funny, but like, I tell you what, there's no better place in college hockey to watch a game. I mean, the Mac, you know, it rocks. You got the student section, you have the Mitch's Misfits. You know, it's just a great atmosphere. The sound in that building, there's not a, excuse me, a bad seat in the rink. So those are all things that, you know, I think we're, you know, you can see how passionate the fan base is. It's the only Division I sport up there. They do support their, you know, Tech really does a nice job of, in the community of supporting the basketball and the football and all the other programs too. But, you know, I think when you're playing Friday and Saturday night that weekend, everybody in town knows what the score is and who scores.
No doubt. I mean, it's one place I'd love to see in the CCHA for sure. And, you know, it is a long trip from here, but I am going to get there. I mean, I have nothing but love for so many of those Tech fans. And so I'm going to make it up there eventually. But I want to talk a little bit about after that run at Tech. You became the GM and head coach at Tri-City Storm in the USHL. You know, how big of a change of pace was that going from an assistant, you know, 30 plus games at the college hockey level to a head coach and GM for a junior hockey team that's playing 60 plus?
Yeah, it's a great league. Great talent in that league. It's great for development league for staff, for players, for coaches, for officials. it really teaches you a lot. It's a grind. Just the coaching aspect, the management aspect, you're wearing so many hats, whether it's sponsorship, community, fundraising, marketing, appearances, community involvement for your team and doing all those things to obviously the day-to-day. It's called the, you know, the USHL, but it's the OSHL. And the coaches have been through it because it's we instead of me. And at the end of the year, convincing those kids and each other to keep on playing for each other and playing the right way, because everybody's, you know, got us secured a scholarship by that point in time and probably established where they're going to get drafted. it's a special championship to win. And that's really when you can have success in the playoffs there, it shows how much the guys care for each other. And I was fortunate enough to be able to coach some great players and we had some great leaders, you know, guys like Tori Della was our captain, and with players like John Marino. There were so many guys that went on to sign NHL contracts off of that team, you know, whether it was Alex Limoges, Wade Allison was an absolute beast for us. Carson Meyer was another one. Brandon Duhame, Nico Sturm. These guys have all went on and had a lot of success and play the game at a high level and played it the right way.
In 2016, I mean, you guys won the Clark Cup too. I mean, that's obviously a huge honor. Everybody in the USHL atmosphere understands how important it is to win a Clark Cup and what it not only does for those players and the people in the program, but also those communities that are so invested into those teams. And just talk about what that honor meant for you and to be one of five rookie head coaches to ever win the Clark Cup and just the experience that you were able to pull from that.
Yeah. I mean, we had a great ownership. Kirk Brooks just passed away. Our president of hockey operations, Steve Lowe, they just won this year in Muskegon in the USHL. So we had some really good support that way. And then just the players and we were, I think, picked to finish dead last. They'd had a real good year the year before, and it just goes to show you we had got in our goal was just to get in the playoffs, because I knew if we could get in the playoffs we could have success, but I didn't want to put a unrealistic tab on those kids. And we just kept getting better, and we were finding ways to lose these games in overtime or in a shootout. And I told the team before the playoffs started, I said, the good thing is there's no more shootouts and there's no more 3-on-3. And if you go back and look at that record, I mean, we hadn't lost, I don't want to fabricate, but it wasn't very many games in the second half that we had lost without that, if any. So I knew we were in good shape. Dubuque was the favorite, and we went into Dubuque and we got into town and everybody was like, oh, they're going to sweep Tri-City. And it was really the only time in my, I was just struggling. I knew I was hard on that group, but I needed to show them that I believed in them and that we believed in them. And I sat them down. I said, unpack your gear, come get me when you're in. And I walked in and I just said, you know what, guys, there's going to be a sweep in this series. And everybody's predicting a sweep. And I said, I'm predicting a sweep. And it's going to be us. I said, there's no way that anybody can beat you guys if you play the way that you are. And I'm so proud of you. And I just turned out and just walked out of the room, never said another word. and we did. So it's funny how with when you show a belief in a team and I really felt like I was putting myself out there, but I really felt that's what that group needed at that time.
Yeah, that confidence is certainly empowering. I mean, that was, I know just in general, a formidable experience for you. 2 years there in Tri-City, but then you get back into college hockey, back to your alma mater as an associate head coach for 6 seasons. I mean, how did your second stint as an assistant in college hockey sort of differ from your first after kind of what you'd gathered, throughout the other coaching ranks in the USHL, the NHL, all these other places you'd been since then?
Yeah, I mean, it really started open up. I mean, the landscape was changing. There was a time where you could really recruit younger players. It's the Wild West now, getting different things for that. But it seemed a little bit like that. We're, obviously going out and securing. We came in, we made the tournament and went to the Frozen Four the first year with a group. And we kind of caught fire the second half of the season and picked up some big wins against Notre Dame, who, was certainly, they were probably the best team, certainly one of the best teams in college hockey that year, certainly the best team in the Big Ten. And we caught fire and got in, but we started to recruit some really high-end players, I think the 1 year we had, Owen Power, Matty Beniers, Luke Hughes and Kent Johnson. We had four of the top five picks in the National Hockey League draft. So we're starting to accumulate a lot of high-end talent, the Cam Yorks of the world, the Johnny Beechers, Thomas Bortolo, Brendan Bichon, Matthew Samuskevich. The list kind of is going on. So, but that presented another set of challenges as, with COVID and the fifth year, in the transfer portal, we didn't know that would be available, and we really didn't have the flexibility to get into that. And you're losing players to the National Hockey League, which was awesome, but you're trying to, cram instead of having 4 years to take a test and win with players, you're trying to get it into 12, 24 months. If you're lucky, you might've had a player for 3 years. And so that senior leadership that is so valuable, and the extension of the coaching staff, that was something that, we're always, I don't want to say struggling with, but it was always a thing that we were trying to put an emphasis on.
Frozen Fours and Michigan for you are a pretty synonymous thing, because you went to three of them while you were an assistant at Michigan, 2018, 2022, and 2023. I mean, how much pride did you sort of take in those moments as a coach to help do it for the school that you played for? I mean, was it different at all?
I think it's different, because you understand as a coach, but you realize how hard it is. And I guess being a seven of them and winning two of them, and it's hard, and you get four teams there every year and three are going on, home unhappy, and there's only one toy in the sandbox and everybody else is crying. It's a special, it's such a great event. It's so fun. It's great memories. And it's the ride the journey that to get your team there is a lot of fun memories and a lot of fun steps along the way. We were certainly knocking on the door, and lots of, obviously you know, Denver in overtime, and Notre Dame, I think, with one second left, and Denver's a great team, and as you know, so much respect for their program, but those are tough lessons and tough defeats a bitter pill.
And yeah, I mean, that kind of led you into your first college head coaching gig at the Division I level last year with Lindenwood, and we had New Ferris State head coach Brett Riley on the show about a month and a half ago, and he talked about kind of the challenges that independent programs face when he was at Long Island. It's you don't have to find 8 games on a schedule. You got to find 34, and you got to find kids that not only want to play at an independent school, but want to help build it into something more than what it currently is. And just talk about your experience with Lindenwood and some of the challenges that maybe you faced as an independent head coach.
Yeah, I mean, I had a great experience. I mean, I was fortunate to, you know, work for a guy, Jason Coomer, the athletic director there. I think he's a brilliant guy. I think he was a great boss to work for. You know, I think a lot of respect for the independent schools, for the coaches at the independent schools, the things that they go through, whether it's travel, whether it's scheduling. You know, obviously a budget is different than it would be at a Power Five school or a Michigan school. So those are all different obstacles that are, or challenges that you face, and that's what those staffs do. So I think those coaches are there. The kids were awesome. Yeah. We came in, and I think we created a culture that we thought we could beat anybody on any given night. And we really did. The belief in each other, and we were competitive every night. And if you, the way that they approached practice with their habits and their detail and the way they conducted themselves in the classroom, something that I'm extremely proud of each and every one of those kids.
Well, that brings us to now. I mean, you're back at Michigan Tech, and you know, the process itself a little abnormal than usual. It happened later in the off season than many coaching hires typically take place. But you know, you're here, and just these last 3 weeks. So what have these sort of been like for you personally? Obviously, it looks like you're still out in St. Charles, right? I mean, what's it kind of been like for you?
Well, it's been hectic, obviously a special set of circumstances and a process that moved extremely fast. Obviously there's a familiarity with Dr. Sandergett, our athletic director, and myself, and a special set of circumstances, obviously with Joe Sean being let go as a personal friend and a great coach and a great guy. So those things are, you know, obviously not easy, and to the timing to you know, maybe not be able to sit down and spend more time with our players at Lindenwood, but was just excited to get back to Michigan Tech. Loved my time up there. Great, passionate fan base. Excited to get to work with the pieces that are in that locker room, and also the incoming freshman class and players that will be with us in the fall. So really excited to get going.
I have kind of a long-winded question, so just kind of bear with me, but the CCHA has had a handful of coaching changes in the last 13, 14 months. I mean, Ferris State, Bowling Green, Northern Michigan, and now Michigan Tech. And then Augustana and Minnesota State each have 2-year head coaches, and there's just been a lot of changes in leadership at the CCHA, but the league as a whole is getting better. I mean, they had a better year in terms of where the collective group was on a pairwise standings basis. Fewer top end kids in the CCHA went in the transfer portal this year. Player retention is going up. Recruiting classes, that freshman class are more talented year after year in the past 2 or 3 years. Does it feel like you're entering a CCHA that is harder to win?
It's a dogfight, like top to bottom. I think there's not a lot of separation. I mean that respectfully to the guys that are on top, and respectfully to whatever the the bottom may look like. I think there's a tremendous amount of experience with the coaches and their leadership and their background. When you talk to any of the coaches, it's a dogfight. It's a battle each and every night. It's hard to get a sweep in this league. You know, you can see the resources that a lot of these institutions are putting into their men's hockey program. And, you know, I think that speaks volumes and is exactly why, you know, you're seeing, you know, probably an uptick in our league. And we have a great, you know, great commissioner.
Yeah.
You know, Don Lucci has been around this game and had a tremendous amount of success in it. So I think we're in good hands there.
You talk about it, like it being a dogfight and it, like top to bottom, right? Ninth place can beat first place on any given night in the CCHA. And so what does it take for a CCHA team to kind of separate itself? And maybe that's a question you don't know the answer to yet.
Or I know the answer to, I just don't want to share. But no, in all seriousness, I think you got to get over the hump. You got to win, you know, you got to take care of business. You got to win your games. And obviously your out of conference games are critical as well. So at the end of the day, you got to win. And you got to find a way to get yourself into that tournament, whether you're a one seed or a four seed. I've lost it as a one seed and I've won it as a four seed. So there's different ways, different paths. As long as you get yourself in it, you got a chance. But it starts with the belief in that locker room and each other, and how bad do you want to pay a price for each other? I mean, everybody talks about they want to win, but you know, it's doing the little things, the attention to detail. It's that sacrifice that you want to make for each other. And everybody, we always talk about, you know, everybody sees when the goal goes in, they can see the goalie made a mistake or player made a great play to score. But there's, if you rewind it, there's a play that could have been made or was made that resulted in that end result. So you're trying to make one more play, one less mistake, and that's a good start. But there's so much that goes into it, right? Yeah. And healthy goaltending, special teams. There's just, you know,
face-offs.
Yeah,
in the playoffs.
We deal with that one here in Bemidji all the time. So.
We promised you, you know, it's awesome stuff, Bill. We promised you some nice lighthearted ones to close it out. And these are always fun ones for us. We hope they're fun for you too. We call them one timers. You know, we'll start it off. I mean, we only have a few for you. What's the toughest road environment that you've experienced as both a coach and as a player?
Oh boy. As a player in college hockey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, if you have a USHL experience, I mean, or, you know, anywhere else or an NHL, I mean, I'd be happy to hear it too.
Oh man, I think Munn was pretty intense. Mankato was pretty intense, yeah. Like as a player and then as a coach. Obviously, you know, when we're at Michigan, we had some real down in Columbus. Things got pretty heated. So. Yeah, there's definitely been some experiences. When we were playing college, we were in the old CCHA, and Western Michigan was in there, and they boot us, tried to boot us off the ice, calling us overrated, and I think we were number one in the country, and they had some good teams, and they actually knocked us off the one year, so it was I'm sure they did it more than once, but. We can't tell. We won't tell them all about that.
who's the most talented player you've ever played with?
That's a great question.
You've listed a lot of really talented players.
I knew this was going to be a tough one for him because he's named off some really, really good players.
Yeah. I mean, Mark Messier was an unbelievable player, but like,
well,
like Alexander McGillney, could do things that, he was unbelievable. The best player I played against in junior hockey was Paul Kariya. He was head and shoulders. Wow. I would love to have seen Paul Kariya play in this day and age, because I don't know if you could take the puck off him in today's day and age. And we probably couldn't back then, but I just think he was pretty special.
What about the most talented player you've ever coached?
Probably Quinn Hughes.
Yeah. I had a feeling you were going that. One of the Hughes brothers.
And Luke was a heck of a talent too. And Owen Power and Matty Beniers. And, there's been a lot of talented players that I've had the pleasure to coach, but I would say Quinn. I mean, there was stuff you just.
He still does that at an NHL level.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ken Johnson, extremely skilled too. Like, I remember going to some junior games and he'd do stuff and you were just like, oh my gosh, and like even coaching, like you say like, oh, what were you thinking here? And instead of trying to tell him what you think you would do, you actually had to ask him what he was thinking, because he'd be thinking of things that, were outside of my skill set. So like, and you just had to be open to that and really, say, okay, well, we can do that next time. But, he was pretty amazing player and how creative he is and a lot of respect for him.
Cool.
This is a fun one. We always get a lot of this is the last one we got for you. And we'll ask it the same way. But we always get some really unique responses from this one. Who's the most underrated player that you've ever played with?
That I've played with in the NHL or?
Well, any level.
Yeah, this player any level. That
maybe never really kind of got the recognition.
Yeah. I will say this.
Pieces in their
a game. Lot of times if they're underrated though, right? Like they're not going to be, they might not make the show, but at the same time, you kind of saw him at the college level, maybe played alongside him, and you were just kind of amazed. I mean, is there a guy who stands out that was kind of under the radar?
Johnny Madden was our third line center at Michigan. Really never played the power play. I think he scored more power play goals than the short. He scored more goals shorthanded that year than the rest of the team scored against us on the power play.
Really?
And obviously went on to win like three cups and a couple Selke trophies. Tremendous player. And I think he was undercover radar, but obviously it didn't end up that way. He ended up having a great career. But he's a guy that tremendous amount of respect for, to see what he did and how hard he worked to as an undrafted player to put his name on the map. And it's funny because the New Jersey Devils had Brandon Morrison. He won the Hobey Baker. He's my centerman. Jason Botterill, GM of Seattle. Excuse me, was on the left wing. And, Lou would come out to watch Mo. And then pretty soon, I guess what happened was he ended up signing Johnny to Albany in the American League deal. And next thing you know, playing in the NHL and winning cups and making a lot of money.
Long career, long fruitful career too. Yeah. What about the most underrated player you've ever coached?
Oh boy. Probably have two of them. Maybe even three.
I was going to say you could fill out a whole roster.
I actually could fill out a lot because I've had some really good success stories with guys that weren't drafted, that believed in themselves. Like Nick Blankenberg was 5'8", playing in Okotoks. I don't think he was drafted in the USHL or the North American League. He didn't play like 5'8", but, just don't tell him he's 5'8". And he was a defenseman, and I went up to watch him, and I saw him after the game. I said, Nick, we don't have any money. We got opportunity for you. Come to Michigan. He goes, I'll take it. And I remember calling Mel Pearson on the way home, or he called me driving the snowstorm back to to Edmonton to the airport, and Mal called me and goes, "Well, what do you think?" I said, "Mal, you're going to think I'm crazy. This kid's 5'8", and I think he's going to play in the National Hockey League." He goes, "I don't think you're crazy." He goes, I've had it happen, you know, and do it." He goes, "Okay, well, get it done." I go, "Well, it is." He goes, "Oh, okay." And we've been together a long time at that point. I certainly wouldn't have done that in my first couple years with him. And, you know, that was kind of a cool story. And, you know, you fast forward a few years and I'm talking to Rick Nash about Kent Johnson in Columbus. And I go, "Rick, you're going to think I'm crazy. You're coming to our game tomorrow night. Watch Blanky." Mm-hmm. And I come out after the game and we were playing Ohio State. And I believe it was a Big Ten playoffs. And, you know, I'm thinking, "What do you think of Kent tonight?" He goes, "We'll talk about him later. I just want to talk about Nick." And I go, "That's an average game for him." He goes, "Wow." And Monday the advisor called me. He goes, "You're not going to believe this. We've got an NHL offer." I go, "Let me guess, Columbus." So, you know, to have a small part to help somebody that did so much, has so much character, you know, is, you know, really, really successful. Probably another story like that would be Nico Sturm. So we got to Tri-City. It was an overage draft. He scored two goals in the All-Star game, which is why we kept him to bring him back. He was a very poor skater at that time. And so we kept him around. We didn't have a lot of depth at that position. We started doing power skating with him 3 days a week before practice, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, just him, edge work, myself and the two assistant coaches, Taylor Nelson at Augustana and Ben Gordon. And, you know, he just worked through his progressions and got better and better. Had a great year for us. Went on to Clarkson with Casey Jones. They obviously did a wonderful job with him. And, you know, he's playing the National Hockey League. He's won a Stanley Cup. And it just goes to show you, if you're willing to put the work in and you get some good help and a little bit of luck along the way. But that's a pretty cool story. And it's real. And, you know, it's a kudos to both Nick and Nico, because they both put so much into their game and invested in so much of themselves and just said, "Hey, I'm not going to be denied. I'm going to keep getting better every day."
You ever taken the time to, and don't, I mean, don't touch it, but have you ever taken the time to get up there and see how many names you got on that cup of guys you've coached?
I haven't got up on the name of it, and I really haven't done a tally, you know, of names. But I mean, the biggest thing for me is obviously growing men, but anytime we can help guys get to the National Hockey League level, I mean, that's really exciting for me, to have a small part or a little part, along the way is something that, you know, I take a lot of pride in that.
No doubt.
Absolutely. Bill, that's all we got. We took up way too much of your time today. So, thank you so much for joining the show. This was a blast.
Awesome, guys. I look forward to seeing you guys this year.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bill.
Okay.
All right. Once again, thank you to Bill McCall for joining the show. Subscribe to the CCHA show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And subscribe to the CCHA on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter at Trent Singer, at Jared Urbato BP. You can check out our work at BemidjiPioneer.com and SiouxFallsLive.com.